Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, fears the Zika virus may be taking off. Talks about talks are about to begin on the Syria conflict. An analyst tells us it's time to go on the offensive with Islamic State. And on a lighter note, superstar singer Taylor Swift has another big hit.
They said it's not a good idea to go from country to pop and abandon your country fans. It probably won't work. But Taylor Swift said, I think it will. And she was right.
Coming up right here on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization warns the Zika virus, seen as a possible cause of severe birth defects, is spreading rapidly through the Americas and could affect as many as 4 million people. Correspondent Carol Pearson is following that story, and she joins us here in the studio. Welcome, Carol.
Thanks, Susan.
I'm sorry we often see you and have very unpleasant stories to talk about, but this is an important one. What is the WHO reporting today?
The WHO says that this virus, the Zika virus, was originally seen as a mild risk to humans, but gosh, then it has started causing birth defects.
It seems like it's exploded.
Yes, and it's affecting several countries. The mosquito that carries it lives in South and Central America as well as North America. It does not live in Canada or Chile because it needs moisture in order to repopulate and grow.
Moisture and heat, and I guess Chile is a dry place.
Yes, it is, and that's why it's not seen as a threat there.
And what else has the UN Health Agency had to say about all this?
Well, people have been asking the WHO to come together on this and to not delay it and respond rapidly, and not delay it like they did with the Ebola virus.
Yes, some people believe that's why it spread so much. The area where the Ebola came, they didn't have the medical facilities and the medical help.
Or the testing, nothing. And people didn't know about it.
So they want to learn from history and not do that again.
Right, but information seems to be getting out that to avoid mosquitoes, to wear repellent. For women, they're asking women not to get pregnant in the areas where the Zika virus has been spreading.
Is there testing if you are pregnant to see if you have the Zika virus?
Yes, there is testing.
Well, that's
that
good.
Can confirm that.
So there is some good news.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Carol.
Okay, thanks.
Let's have a look at what people are saying about the Zika virus on social media. And my colleague Michael Lippin is here at the anchor desk with details. Michael.
Thank you, Susan. Well, the World Health Organization's warnings about the Zika virus are resonating widely across social media, with many news organizations tweeting stories about those warnings with the hashtags Zika and Zika virus. The WHO itself has been tweeting frequently about the virus. In the last few hours, two WHO medical specialists briefed the media on the situation, and the WHO Twitter account posted a series of quotes from them. Here's one quote from Dr. Silvan Aldeguieri. He said, "Zika spreads rapidly in the Americas because the population does not have immunity and the Aedes mosquitoes are everywhere." Here's another quote from Dr. Bruce Aylward. He says, "In the face of so much uncertainty on the Zika virus, it is important to demonstrate caution, particularly around pregnant women."
Well, has the U.S. authorities been saying anything about Zika on social media, Michael?
Well, President Obama's National Security Council tweeted about Zika within the last hour. Its handle is @NSC44, and it posted a link to a White House website blog by Deputy Assistant to the President for Homeland Security, Amy Pope. In the blog, Pope tries to answer a series of frequently asked questions about Zika, including, should we be concerned about Zika in the United States? Well, Pope writes that the U.S. mainland does have Aedes species mosquitoes that can become infected with and spread the Zika virus. She also says U.S. travelers who visit a country where Zika is found could become infected if bitten by a mosquito. So this is obviously a topic that's getting more and more attention within the United States, and it could even become an issue in the presidential election campaign, which features a debate tonight among the Republican contenders. A Twitter user in South Carolina, Bakari Sellers, made this appeal today. "All candidates in tonight's GOP debate should be asked about the Zika virus and their plan." So let's see if it comes up, Susan.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. This is VOA.
Here, science in a minute.
Australian astronomers say they have found the largest solar system ever observed. When they noticed a solitary planet meandering through space, the astronomers wondered if it had a host star or if it were a rogue or starless planet. So, after conducting a search, the astronomers found a red dwarf star that's about 100 light years away, which is the same distance as the planet. The astronomers linked the star with the planet after they studied their motion and noticed they were both moving together. The solitary planet is thought to be a gas giant planet with about 12 to 15 times the mass of Jupiter. Astronomers calculated that the distance between the planet and its star is about 1 trillion kilometers. The planet makes one complete orbit around its star every million years, and its orbit is more than 140 times wider than Pluto's. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Talks are set to get underway in Geneva Friday on what promises to be a long road to peace in Syria. The conflict is soon entering its sixth year and has left dead a quarter of a million people. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez is following this story, and he joins us today from our bureau in London. Hi, Luis.
Hi, Susan.
See, these are not exactly peace talks.
No, what we're looking at are proximity talks. That is, negotiations to begin negotiations. So basically, the purpose is to lay down the groundwork for the real talks, which would seek to lay out to establish a ceasefire and ultimately end the war.
Does this mean the series that we're starting Friday would cover things like where they meet, the size of the table, that sort of thing?
Exactly those kinds of details that have made it so complicated just to sit down to begin talking about talking, right? Of course, the big question is who should participate, who should represent who, and what topics to address first. Now, one thing that does seem pretty clear going into these talks is that the opposition plans to ask for a broad ceasefire while they're negotiating, and also for access to humanitarian aid to reach all parts of the country.
Well, this conflict started out as a part of the Arab Spring, but has grown into something much, much more complicated.
Yes, I was actually a correspondent in the Middle East when it began in the spring of 2011. At that time, like in other places such as Tunisia, Egypt, it started with demonstrations that were peaceful. Syria had for more than four decades been living under an authoritarian government of the Assad family. And, by all accounts, analysts had said Syria was ripe for democratic change that was sweeping the rest of the region. What happened was that those peaceful demonstrations were broken up when Assad's forces cracked down on them violently, and it very quickly escalated into the all-out civil war that we now have on our hands.
And it's all complicated by the rise of ISIS.
ISIS is very much a huge complicating factor. In fact, in these negotiations that are going to take place, the group is not going to be represented because essentially it is a common enemy, an enemy to both the Assad government and to the moderate opposition forces that are going to be negotiating peace.
Well, bottom line, Luis, does anybody really expect these talks to accomplish a great deal?
In terms of concrete results, initially, absolutely not. What is hoped here is that at least they can agree, as we say, on the size of the table, on the type of room in which they'll be meeting. And you know, I should mention that these talks will not even be face-to-face. There'll be middle people from the UN who will be relaying and essentially in a very deep way brokering any agreement that comes out from this. So it is an important first step. It's born out of urgency, mainly in the West, to end the conflict. And that urgency is fueled by both the ISIS attacks that we have seen recently in France and in the United States, the threat that continues to loom over much of Western Europe, and also the migrant crisis.
Well, thank you very much, Luis. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, we'll hear about a U.S. presence in Libya and another hit song for someone who just doesn't seem to need one. The U.S. Defense Department has acknowledged the presence of a small force of U.S. military personnel on the ground in Libya. Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook says they're trying to make contact with Libyan forces to gain a clear picture of the threat posed by the Islamic State in the North African country. His remarks followed those of the top U.S. military official, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Joseph Dunford, that the U.S. is prepared to take decisive military action to check the IS group, also known as ISIL, in Libya.
We are extremely worried about the metastasis of ISIL to other locations, Libya being just one of those locations. We continue to monitor the situation there, continue to work very closely with our coalition partners, with others in the region who have similar concerns about the situation in Libya. And I think it's fair to say that we're closely monitoring the situation, as Chairman Dunford has indicated, working with those partners, and also continuing to have conversations with people on the ground as to exactly what's happening there and the threat that ISIL poses to the United States and others. We've shown in the past a willingness to strike in Libya. We've taken out a key ISIL leader in Libya in the past. We see this threat in ISIL as a serious threat, and we're going to continue to monitor the situation and consider what options we have moving forward. Get a better sense of who the players are, who might be worthy of U.S. support and support from some of our partners going forward in the fight against ISIL. It is a complicated picture, and that's why the formation of a government is so central to the future for Libya and to also addressing the issue of ISIL in Libya.
Libya, with two rival administrations following years of chaos, have the overthrow of dictator Muammar Gaddafi, lacks a unified central authority, and could be home to as many as 5,000 IS fighters who control the coastal city of Sirte and surrounding areas. The cable news network quotes a senior U.S. defense official as saying, military reconnaissance flights over the country and covert intelligence gathering missions are focused on tracking and locating the IS presence. The official said Dunford hopes to develop recommendations in the next several weeks to offer options for U.S. military action, perhaps in conjunction with allies such as France, Italy, and Britain. Former U.S. diplomat James Jeffrey, who held posts in Iraq and Turkey, is now with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty he's delighted the Obama administration is beginning to take the IS threat seriously. It's time, he says, to go on the offensive.
Not only to suppress and ultimately destroy ISIS, but basically shake the image that the world has that we are ducking any conflict with anybody. This is dramatic and serious. Look at what the Russians and the Iranians and the Assad government are doing in Syria. They're winning that war militarily as we sit on our hands. Whereas our petty little war against ISIS, we still haven't figured out almost 2 years after we put troops in June of 2014, who's going to take on a major offensive against a force of maybe 20,000 to 30,000 people. This is pathetic, and it is extremely dangerous. So any effort that this president shows from keeping 5,000 troops on to Afghanistan to putting maybe 50 on the ground in Libya, while it is ridiculously inadequate, is a big step forward for him and a big step forward for us.
Now, this puts U.S. troops in the Middle East where? How many countries right now, do you think?
We've got a battalion in the Sinai, and have had it since the late 1970s. We've got some troops on the ground, but these aren't combat troops. These are special forces, advisors, raiders, and possibly forward air controllers. I mean, they shouldn't be looked at as ground combat troops. We've got ground combat troops in Iraq, 3,500, but they're not actually in combat. We've got ground combat troops in Jordan and in Kuwait, but they're in various training or defense or support roles. We've got 50 special forces apparently now in Syria. We've got, obviously, 10,000 troops in Afghanistan. I think that's a pretty good inventory of the ground forces we've got of any significance in the Middle East. But you add it all up, and that's Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Kuwait, Egypt, and Libya.
The Pentagon spokesman, Peter Cook, on Wednesday said there have been some U.S. forces in Libya trying to establish contact with forces on the ground. Do you have any idea what ballpark number of U.S. troops might be on the ground and who might they be searching for?
Find anybody who will kill al-Qaeda and ISIS and who isn't al-Qaeda and ISIS. I suspect we're beginning to move towards that direction.
How do they establish contact with you? Do they have people in advance that they are trying to search for?
We have never lost contact with various groups inside Libya. I'll just leave it at that. And there are various elements of the U.S. government that do this.
Give me a sense as to the growing threat of Islamic State in Libya.
It occupies one city. Much of the country is ruled by Islamic militias, and they come in various flavors. None of them look like they're people we would like, but we've dealt with them before. We were working with them until we pulled out a year and a half ago. There are some that we can probably deal with, and the whole idea is to suppress the Al-Qaeda, ISIS transnational threat, and to some degree, the threat to the stability of Libya itself.
James Jeffrey says while the IS group does not pose an immediate threat to Western Europe or the United States and may not have the capability to take over in Libya, it is part of the chaos there and instrumental in creating and perpetrating the migrant flow to Europe. Meanwhile, Algeria has announced it is suspending commercial flights to Libya effective Friday after detaining hundreds of Moroccans destined there and suspected of being part of the IS recruitment campaign. This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new? Well, they're calling it the first foldable headset for movie lovers. Who's they? The Royal X Company, makers of the soon-to-be-released Royal X headset. It features a video monitor that flips out from the top and folds down to completely cover the eyes. Royal X Video boasts a contrast ratio of 10,000 to 1 and a pixel density of 3,300 pixels per square inch. The headphones provide noise cancellation up to 22 decibels. Everything you see on the headset can be adjusted, including focus and optical strength on each eye and even how far apart the eye slots are. The headset supports Wi-Fi sharing, wireless streaming, USB, and HDMI. There are a couple of downsides. The headset is pretty bulky, and you do have to carry around an external controller for the battery and the connections. Also, it's pretty expensive at $699 US dollars. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossman.
You're not going to believe this one, but Taylor Swift, you know that singer, good looking, good dancer, very wealthy, tremendously successful. Well, she's going to be boring. She's got another hit. And my colleague Larry London of Border Crossings has joined us here in the studio to give us this news. You know, she's like a broken record, you might say.
Yeah, in many
hit
ways.
Hit after hit after hit, Larry.
That's right. In many ways. And this is the album that defied her record company's recommendation. The 1989 album was recorded against their best wishes. They said it's not a good idea to go from country to pop and abandon your country fans. It probably won't work. But Taylor Swift said, I think it will. And she was right. So now she has her sixth hit from the 1989 album, which is her fifth album and her first to be an all-pop album.
You know those horror movies where somebody makes a pact with the devil to get something and then it turns around and bites them in the end? It's just incredible how her career has been so tremendous.
Well, when you talk about incredible accomplishments, Taylor Swift is the second most charting artist on the Hot 100 pop chart, just behind Aretha Franklin.
Wow.
Taylor Swift has had 61 songs make it to the pop charts in her career.
And she's still young.
And she's very young, and Aretha has had 73. And Taylor's, as I say, still going strong, only 5 albums. And she just finished her world tour, which, you know, these tours for Taylor last at least a year, sometimes 2 years. So she works very hard for the money, to quote the lyrics of a famous song. And she's done very, very well. They love her around the world. The song, Out of the Woods, is the new song. A lot of people believe, well, the lyrics might have been inspired by her short relationship with Harry Styles from the group One Direction, although she's not willing to confirm that.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the song.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Thank you.
So, Larry, you were talking about her career and how she's on the road a lot. Is this going to be one of those cases where she might regret missing some of her youth by working so hard all the time?
Not at all. Taylor is, to coin a phrase, a workaholic. She works very hard. She feeds on work. You know, you got to keep in mind, Susan, the fact that Taylor grew up as an outcast. She was the kid at school no one wanted to play with. No one wanted her on their team. No one liked her. And the family even had to move to another state to get out of that rut that they were in, that she was in. And look at her now. Everybody wants a piece of Taylor Swift. She's loving it. This is quite a refreshing change from the way she grew up.
I guess those kids are pretty sorry they behave that way now.
I'll bet you they are. Look at me now, Taylor Swift.
Okay, thank you, Larry, for coming by. I always appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Susan.
Thanks for joining us today for International Edition, and I bet you that song's going to go on and on and on in your head.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The United States is determined to disrupt the illicit flow of money from the trade of oil and trafficking of antiquities to the terrorist group Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL. Toward this end, the U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the significant disruption of the sale and/or trade of oil and antiquities by, for, on behalf of, or to benefit ISIL. Through its illegal oil operations and trafficking in looted archaeological material from Syria and Iraq, ISIL has generated millions of dollars in hard currency, enabling it to brutalize and oppress innocent civilians. This is the first time the U.S. Secretary of State has authorized a Rewards for Justice offer for information that could be used to disrupt the sale or trade in oil and antiquities by or on behalf of a terrorist organization. Anyone with information on oil and antiquities trafficking that benefits ISIL can contact the Rewards for Justice office via the website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or by email at info@rewardsforjustice.net or by standard mail at Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303. USA. Individuals in North America can also call this phone number, 1-800-877-3927. All information will be kept strictly confidential. The Rewards for Justice program is administered by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Diplomatic Security. Since its inception in 1984, the program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that put terrorists behind bars or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. Follow us on Twitter at https://twitter.com/rewardsforjustice, as in the numeral 4.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States.